the Matt Pubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. The election is looming. I don't know if you've heard. We have a presidential election here in the U.S. this year. We've talked about it a little bit in the world. And one of the things that one of the candidates has said recently about the presidential election is fearing that it's rigged. And that could, of course, come in many different forms. But one of the things that concerns people a little bit these days is electronic voting and the way the machines are set up, and how well is that protected, and should we be concerned about anything? And it's been in the news a little bit recently. Joining us on the phone right now is the Vice President of Technology for Beyond Trust, Maury Haber. Hey, Maury, how are you?
I'm doing great. Yourself, Matt?
We're doing good. So explain to me what Beyond Trust is.
Beyond Trust is a cybersecurity software vendor specializing in privileged access management and vulnerability management. That's basically controlling your credentials, your passwords for systems, and making sure that there's no inherent threats when someone logs in.
Is this a concern when it comes to voting, the way the machines have changed over the years, the more electronic nature of the machines? Should we be concerned that there is the possibility for hacking or other vulnerabilities of those systems?
There really is, and it kind of stems back to even the election in 2000. We had all the debates around chads and did the person mean to punch this or punch that. Now we've gone electronic so that there really is no question, but they're built on regular Windows and Linux and standard computers that we use every day and work in our business every day. They're susceptible to vulnerabilities and could be hacked, everything from the electronic kiosk itself to the front-end systems that do voter registration.
You know, it's interesting. I can understand why we have these electronic systems so that we're more exact, so that it's recorded more exactly, and it's a safer system. But I don't understand why they're tied to anything on the internet. Why isn't it just recording all those votes, and then the machine is taken and then plugged into something that then records the votes? Or is that how it works? How does it work with those machines?
It's a little bit more complicated than that. Think of everybody that is registered to vote. It's a database in the back end, and we actually saw that breach in Arizona and Illinois hit the news earlier in the week. You can change your voter's registration directly from the internet, right? You don't have to mail in a card anymore or go down to the post office or anything like that. When you go to vote, they have to verify who you are. So the kiosks that actually register your votes have got to be able to talk to the back end to see if you're actually allowed to vote, registered, and your information is correct.
And so what's the hacking that took place in Arizona and Illinois? What happened there?
They came through the voter registration system and were able to access the database and dump information. That's where the fears really start from, because if you can get to that point, you could change someone's information and potentially swayed a mass amount of people that they can't vote. They're being rejected to vote, and then their voices are not heard. The larger threat or the bigger threat is, well, if people or hackers were able to get that far, regardless of who they are, could they change the statistics at the end to favor one candidate or another, even though there's, you know, that's not what people voted for?
Well, and how realistic is that? I mean, can there be outside access to actual votes and changing of that if somebody hacked it correctly?
Absolutely, and that's the scary part. If you consider some of the threats that have already happened, look at Office of Management and Budget a year and a half ago, where you had everybody applying for classified information, their fingerprints, that was leaked. The IRS Get Transcript Service, which, you know, governs the entire nation in terms of IRS, was hacked. Is it possible? Yes. Will they find a way? Will someone find a way? Probably. The question is will the defenses of each of the states and their voting systems hold up if someone decides to do a targeted attack of that nature?
Well, and what's the, you know, there's so many different ways that this could turn out really badly for us. Here we try to improve the systems, make it easier, make it more representative, and all of those things after 2000, and now it could come back to bite us. So what should be done? Is it, have we gone too far? Have we made everything too accessible, or are there better ways to protect it? We should keep it like it is, but we need to, you know, what, set up more firewalls? What's the recommendation?
The recommendation is for the states to just follow security best practices. And know that sounds trivial, but patch the systems, test them, use penetration testing services companies, use people that are basically on the good side of the fence to make sure that the bad guys can't get in. We do have some very good things about the way the system is set up today that people are ignoring, especially in the news. Each state buys their own system. Obviously, some states have bought from the same companies and others, you know, others, but they're not uniform. It's not like the IRS Get Transcript Service that everybody that applied to the IRS could have potentially been hacked. It's different. So one hack on one state or even in one local government may not work elsewhere. So in order for someone to potentially hack the entire system, they would have to break through multiple vendors, multiple setups, multiple everything. And that's would be nearly impossible. So for it to be regional or a specific state or specific system, very possible. But unfortunately, some of those systems are designed better than others. Some have better protections than others. And even worse, some of them don't even have paper records so that if they had to go back and do the auditing, it doesn't exist. So there is some glimmer of hope that we have such a diverse type of system. It would be really difficult. But all it takes is one populous state, one penetration, and we could have that flaw.
Yeah, I mean, really, when it comes down to a close election, one state can turn everything around if the hackers know what they're doing. So that is a concern. Should there be federal regulation? I know the states are pretty, states like to stay independent and do their own thing. Do you think federally there should be a law passed to get a little more uniformity? I know that it's good that we have all these different systems because hackers can't hack everything the same way then, but at least a standard of procedures or benchmarks you have to hit for how protected the integrity of the voting, should there be something done on a national level?
I think so, and I think the government has actually made some very good strides in that. There is an initiative called FedRAMP, which is something all of the U.S. government participates in, and it's a standardized way of checking, assessing, reporting, and testing for security vulnerabilities on computers. If it's a federal agency, they have to adhere to it, and that's been mandated for several years now. The election system is really no different, but that mandate doesn't cover state and local systems of this nature, and I think that if there was independent testing or a standard that all of them had to, basically certify their systems to, I think we would be in better shape, especially to protect against a threat like this.
Do we know what percentage of the counties around America are actually using an electronic system? I imagine there have to be less populous areas that just weren't as concerned that are still sticking with paper ballots, right?
Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't have that statistic, but yes, realistically, some are paper still, some are electronic. In the more populous areas or more, states that would have more advanced systems like California or New York, you'll clearly see electronic all the way through.
Mm. Interesting. And what's the concern come down to? I imagine it's anybody, but, Russia or China hacking into the system or one of the two parties in control hacking into the system?
Well, the fear really is what would be the outcome? What is the motive? Anytime a hacker does anything, doesn't matter if it's Edward Snowden or someone looking for your credit card, they're looking to make a statement or monetize their hack. Often or not, it could be both. In this case, it would be to alter the election in one way or another. So if it's Russia, who are they supporting? Why are they doing it? Is it to disrupt it, delay it, that type of effect? You have to really understand why someone would want to do it and what their desired outcome is. And, the rumors in the news between Trump and Putin, today it even states Putin doesn't care who hacked the DNC. Why does it matter? It was done. So you really have to think a little bit more cynical as to what their goals would be.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine that, how do you think this plays out in a couple of months when we have the election? Donald Trump has said if he loses, he's worried it's rigged. And, the way he's been, I could see him playing that up if he doesn't win the election. And I wonder if there's going to be a scenario where people are going to assume there were problems here, even if there weren't.
It's very possible. I just cite back to the election of the year 2000 with the Chads in Florida and your previous statement, could one state shift the election one way or another? It has already happened. We already had to take it to the Supreme Court. So if we were worried about electronic fraud in the voting system and mass hacks or even just a state's hack, it would escalate. It would delay the results. There would be an investigation. The systems themselves do document enough to determine what happened, and what would be the worst case? It hits the news in the worst way possible. They force a local re-election. It goes to the Supreme Court. We've already seen things like this in the past. I don't think it would be much different than what we could experience in the future.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, we're going to take a quick break. We're speaking with Maury Haber. He is the Vice President of Technology at Beyond Trust. Cybersecurity is the issue. We're talking about it as far as the election, but I bet Maury also has some advice for us all personally as well. We'll get to that next. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I pay the price. All I want is to be left alone in my
Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Maury Haber, Vice President of Technology for a company called Beyond Trust. They deal with cybersecurity. We've been speaking about the election and e-voting and all the different ways that things could go wrong. But Maury, I guess a concern people would have, of course, we're concerned about the election. We want the integrity of the election to be protected. But if people are hacking into systems, they're getting at some of our personal information as well. When it comes to the election systems, is there any personal information in there that we should be worried about or concerned about? Or is it more everything else we're doing in the world that we should be concerned about as far as losing our personal information?
Certainly. The personal information in the voting system is no different than what would be in the property appraiser's office. I bet it may have Social Security or some additional information like your affiliate party. There's nothing in there that is that detrimental if it was stolen. But people have to remember that we put information like this in a variety of systems every single day. And the most common problem that people make is using the same password over and over from multiple sites, from banking to Facebook. And if one of them is compromised, it's just easy to guess. You know, hey, you're probably on this site or you posted something that way. And try reusing the same password. That's what gets most of us in trouble and what's been in the news with Dropbox, Twitter, and others in the past couple of weeks. It's difficult to remember a variety of passwords, but it's really the safest way to keep yourself protected from one site compromising another.
It's such a pain in the butt, though, Maury. We have so many different places. Anytime you buy something, they want you to register and log in. I mean, there's a million different passwords, and so I fall into the same boat. I have a few different variations, but I have passwords that are being used the same in many different places, partly because then when I go to sign into somewhere, I can take a guess or two because I know what my passwords are and usually get it. How safe is it? Because I use Mac systems and iOS devices, and they always let me, when I type in something on a website, do you want us to remember this password? And I've started doing that more and more on my computer, thinking that, well, with my phone, if they can't unlock it or if I turn it off right away, it should be fine if I lose it. Or with my computer, if they don't sign in, you know, hopefully I can get away with this. Do you recommend people doing that? Would you rather people have very difficult passwords, but their computer remembers it for them, or maybe not as good passwords, but don't ever let anything remember it for you?
I would take the former. I would let the computer recommend something complex and store it in something like the iCloud keychain that Apple promotes, or even Microsoft's technology. There's plenty of third-party tools out there as well that allow you to store the passwords, retrieve them, and then you just cycle your master password on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. That's probably the safest way to do it. It's a much more safe than putting it on a spreadsheet, putting it on a post-it note or anything like that. And if you're worried about, you know, your estate or something along those lines, that's what you put in the lockbox, that one password that unlocks the rest of the keychain, and then you don't have to worry about anybody after the fact trying to, you know, deal with your estate or accounts if there's a problem.
What's the biggest thing people can personally do to protect themselves a little more? Is it quit giving out your Social Security number whenever anybody asks for it, or is it just password protection, do a better job with your passwords? What is it?
Well, you should never give out your social, period, for starters. The best thing people can do to protect themselves is really two basic things. One is if your computer says I've got security updates and they're legitimate, you didn't fall for a phishing attack or ransomware, let the computer reboot. Just mm-hmm. let it reboot. Also, as simple as it sounds, modern Windows operating systems and Macs log you in as an administrator. Stop doing that. Create the secondary account where you're a standard user. And if something needs to be an admin, you retype in the password. That'll stop most malware, ransomware, phishing attacks, etc., from taking a hold of your computer or potentially keystroke loggers from spying on what you're doing. Modern computers fall basically from a fault that's been around forever. We never thought of security. It's always been an afterthought. And even when we buy them today, we're admins. If we start thinking of them as standard users or dropping our privileges, it'll stop a lot of the problems that are out there.
That's really interesting. I'd never heard or thought of that before. On my Mac, I'm an administrator, so I can do updates. I can do anything I want whenever. Sometimes I have to re-sign in my password to okay that. But it's always asking me about updates, things like that. If I sign in as a guest instead, then none of that can be done, and anybody coming in from the outside can't get true access to my computer.
In some ways, guest is actually the lowest form of access. In between a guest and administrator on a Mac, or even on Windows, is what's called a standard user. You can do a lot of things, but it will still prompt you to put in a username and password, but it does it under a different account. And then anything that tries to get in, tries to do something malicious that's deep within the system would prompt for that username and password. And if you're not sure, you just hit cancel.
So as an administrator, it'll just do things. Sometimes it's depending on a website I go to, different things like that, because I've already sort of given the computer an okay.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. And if you go back to Windows XP, which is end of life, we really never saw that. Everything just ran. And people didn't like Windows Vista because they got that pop-up all the time. It's called UAC. And you have to click on it to say yes. And it was driving people nuts because it was too intrusive. Mm. Microsoft has backed it out, all the way to Windows 10 where, okay, it only happens when really big changes occur. But it's still a button that you click OK, and people are prone to click OK, just like on a phishing site or something in an email or on a website, and then they realize they're infected. Have it pop up that username and password so you can have safe computing or think twice about what you're actually doing versus just hitting the OK button.
Very interesting stuff. Maury Haber is the Vice President of Technology at Beyond Trust. You can find out more at beyondtrust.com and visit Maury on Twitter at Maury Haber, H-A-B-E-R, Maury Haber. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Matthew, for having me.
So I guess the phrase wouldn't be hanging chads this time around. Maybe it'll be miscounted zeros and ones. We'll figure it out in a couple of months. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.